to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. We're joined by Daniel Gallington, a man with more titles in various capacities in the federal government than we would have time to go through, certainly to do justice to. He has worked at senior levels, and I had the privilege of collaborating with him in a previous life in the Reagan administration, but he's gone on to serve in both the Defense Department, the Justice Department, on Capitol Hill as, among other things, the General Counsel to the U.S. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. These days, he is a consultant, he is teaching, he is also writing a column for the Washington Times. It's always good to have him in the house. Daniel, welcome back.
Thanks, Frank. It's always a pleasure for me. Always a pleasure for me.
Dan, let me turn quickly to the North Korea drama. We've been talking about it throughout the program. It is clearly on the minds of policymakers here in the United States and elsewhere around the world as the threat seems to be becoming more grievous by the day, perhaps of an electromagnetic pulse attack, perhaps the leading edge of China's magic and other operations, as Bill Gertz has described them, against us. One of the things that we have clung to try to prevent any country, not just North Korea, perhaps in due course Iran, but China, Russia as well, from contemplating attacks against us, has been having a credible, effective nuclear deterrent. You have been involved in this business for a long time in the Air Force and in the civilian side of the Defense Department. Could you just very quickly give us a sort of status report on America's nuclear deterrent?
Well, I think the bottom line is that we've allowed it to go fallow since the end of the Cold War, and as true with a lot of our defense capabilities, we've simply not funded them and not continued the R&D that we've needed. For example, we probably no longer have the full range of nuclear deterrent capability that we had in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and 80s. You may remember the trip line doctrine in NATO Europe. And obviously, Putin, as a study of student of history, understood the very importance of having this full range of nuclear capability to apply to various stages of a conflict to make sure it didn't elevate to the next level.
So we're talking about sort of relatively low-yield tactical nuclear weapons all the way up to very devastating strategic nuclear weapons. And when you say gone fallow, could you just walk us through what that means as a practical matter? How long has it been since we've done any nuclear testing? What is the condition of the sort of intellectual personnel component of our nuclear weapons complex and the physical plant as well? It's really important to understand where we actually are, not just in the weapons themselves.
Exactly. I think the DOE weapons laboratories have essentially aged out. The guys that you and I worked with back in the 80s are now in the retired stages. I don't think there's any new blood in this business, and the technologies that we're using even out in the operational area are essentially 1970s technologies.
You know, Dan, this calls to mind an interesting anecdote from one of our old friends who shared this with me some time ago in connection with the fact that we haven't been doing any nuclear testing, no underground actual explosive nuclear testing since 1992. And he said that one of the bright young fellows who has been doing lots of simulations and modeling in the weapons complex in recent years came to him at one point and said to him, "I hate experimentation. It interferes with my calculations." And it seems to me that says volumes about the possibilities that you may be relying on simulations and modeling and so on that that doesn't actually square with reality. Could that speak to a lack of actual credible capability in our deterrent?
Well, you have to look at that as a foreign leader would look at it, as Putin would look at it, maybe the Chinese would look at it. They would have to be sitting around a table and be talking just like you and I are now, but the focus would be on the credibility of the U.S. deterrent. And there's no secrets here that it's not as credible as it used to be.
And may not be sufficiently credible is the key point. And just very quickly, Dan Gallington, I've been told that we have in this industrial plant that supports our nuclear deterrent buildings that are basically dating back to the Manhattan Project, some of them literally leaking and in otherwise, terrible condition. Hard, I'm imagining, to attract good people to work in them, and really raising again the question of the degree to which foreign adversaries might think we no longer are up to deterring them.
I think that's the whole of the fiscal plants and the infrastructure has just, as I said, gone fallow. It really has. There's got to be a serious and long-term injection of both money and talent into this effort, or we're going to continue to slide down the line as we have.
Well, or more to the point, face actual threats, perhaps being executed against us, not just, at the rhetorical level. Dan, let me switch gears, because as you mentioned, you were the last bipartisan counsel on the Intelligence Committee in the Senate. It is a very partisan place these days. Could you just give us a quick update on the status, as best we can tell, of the investigations that the Senate panel and its House counterparts have been engaged in with respect to this whole allegation of Russian collusion in the 2016 presidential election of the United States?
Well, my assessment is that, and always has been, that it's essentially a political exercise and has been from the very first and continues to be. I wrote a piece not so long ago in the Washington Times about how these special prosecutors generally do their job, and what they generally do is to focus on the smaller players in any situation and get them in violation of some technical or regulatory set of laws, and then use that as leverage to compel them to cooperate with them against a larger target, whoever that might be. Manafort, for example, was involved in an activity that I think would be an understatement to say regulatory intensive, because he was consulting and he was in various business relationships with foreigners. Now, I won't say it's impossible to do that kind of work without doing something wrong or some technical violation, but it's very, very hard to avoid the regulatory morass, the ITARs, the regulation of foreign agencies, all that stuff. It's an incredibly complex area.
And this is Paul Manafort, the former chairman of the President's Campaign Committee, and it certainly seems there's blood in the water with respect to his prosecution.
Yeah, right. And then you have this whole set of previous statements that you made. A lot of people get themselves in trouble when they're interviewed, and instead of saying, well, I'm not going to talk about that, I'm going to exercise my right to counsel, they may go ahead and make a statement, and the statement turns out to be false or incorrect. Now, typically you have that dynamic going on in an investigation such as this.
And a guy like Mueller will squeeze you to get your cooperation with the prosecution of others. Dan Gallington, we are hard out of time. There's so much more to talk about. I hope you'll join us again in the near future to continue our conversation. In the meantime, thank you for the terrific contributions you've made to our country over the years. And I know you're continuing to, among other things, in your outlet at the Washington Times. We'll look forward to continuing the conversation. We'll look forward to talking to the rest of you again on Monday. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.